Hey there, Nationals fans, and welcome to episode 2 of the Believe in Nationals podcast. I'm your host, Blake Finney. And, well, it actually happened. The Nationals did what many thought was unthinkable a couple months ago and traded Juan Soto to the San Diego Padres. Joining me on the podcast a bit later on to break down the trade and the events that preceded it is Patrick Reddington, editor-in-chief at Federal Baseball. No doubt, Tuesday was a tough day for Nationals fans. Juan Soto is the latest in a long line of Nationals stars to depart, either via trade or via free agency, but this one might sting the most because of the track that he appeared to be on at just 23 years old, already being arguably the best hitter in baseball, having the charisma and star power to be the face of any franchise for 20 plus years, and as much of a Hall of Fame lock as a 23-year-old can be. In truth, there's probably no return for Juan Soto that could ever have been fair value, and the trade was seemingly about just maximising any return for him now, when the Padres can have him on their team for 3 pennant races instead of 2 had they waited until the offseason or next trade deadline. And it all comes off the back of Soto rejecting a 15-year, $440 million contract extension, an extension that was not realistically going to get a deal done. While the total value was record-breaking, the $29 million annual average value was way lower than a player of Soto's caliber deserves, even on a long-term deal. Max Scherzer's $43.3 million annual average value came on a 3-year deal, so it isn't really an appropriate comparison. But to even be in the right ballpark, the Nationals probably needed to get to at least $35 million annual average value, putting him above the likes of Francisco Lindor, who's in the first year of a 10-year, $410 million extension with the Mets, and right behind Mike Trout's $35.5 million annual average value on a 12-year deal. But if the Nationals truly believed that it was going to be impossible to sign Juan Soto to a long-term extension, then the trade they got back was probably about as good as they were likely to get, even if adding in an additional prospect such as Jackson Merrill may have been the icing on it. So to break down the big deal, here's this episode's guest, Patrick Reddington. Now joining me on the podcast, it took some negotiating, but I finally managed to get the big boss on the podcast, my editor at Federal Baseball and the editor-in-chief, Patrick Reddington. How are you doing, Patrick?
Good, and without getting myself in trouble, you know I work cheap, so no problem.
Let's get right into it and discuss the big news, the A-Ray Adrianza trade. With just over 6 hours remaining until the trade deadline, the Nationals agreed to trade their superstar outfielder Juan Soto, as well as Josh Bell, to the San Diego Padres. In return, the Nationals received Luke Voit, CJ Abrams, a rookie shortstop, Mackenzie Gore, a rookie left-handed starting pitcher who's out injured at the moment, outfield prospect Robert Hassel III, another outfield prospect James Wood, and 18-year-old flamethrowing prospect Harleen Toussaint. I'll probably butcher the pronunciation of the last one. I'm sure we'll get official pronunciation later, but what was your initial reaction when the trade broke? And today, did you think, waking up, that they were actually going to trade Soto today?
I was about 50-50 when I woke up. Just the idea that they were going to trade him didn't sit well with me. I understand the thinking behind it. You don't think he's going to sign there long term. You have 2.5 years where you don't think you're going to necessarily be competitive unless a lot of things go your way. As Rizzo said today, it was the peak value for him at this point. Padres have 3 playoff runs if they can stay in contention with the lineup that they have. I don't think that's going to be a problem for them. Just a once-in-generation talent. And I noticed Rizzo bristled when someone asked him if he thought he was going to go down in history as the GM who traded Soto and told reporters today, I'm also the one who signed him, developed him, and won a World Series with. Rizzo was a little defensive, it seemed, at the press conference today, but it makes sense considering where the Nationals are, where they find themselves. I think it sets the reboot time frame back a little bit by doing it, but like I said, I woke up 50-50. I wasn't going to be surprised if they did. For the fan base sake, from what I'm hearing from fans, I was kind of hoping they didn't end up trading Soto unless they got what they wanted, but this deal is, I was just trying to find quickly Davey Martinez's description yesterday of what they wanted. Some high-end prospects, some guys with major league experience. They got 2 of each of those, and then a young pitcher who's really projectable, but as Rizzo said, throwing over 100 in the Arizona League right now. So not completely surprised it went down. Still shocked that you trade Juan Soto. Just the fact that you're dealing a kid like that, who, you know, is just preternaturally talented and really put up, you know, batting average aside this year. He's put up fantastic numbers in his first 5 years in the majors. And just the idea of trading him, I think, shocked everyone in the baseball world. But they got the return thereafter and they did it.
Yeah, I think as the process went along, it did feel like when the report first came out, it seemed like it was going to be just entertaining. Is someone going to pay over the odds? But I guess as the process went along, it felt like they were more forced towards a trade and they were trying to make something happen rather than just waiting and seeing if the right offer came in their lap. What did you make of them including Josh Bell in the trade? Because obviously it felt like he was also going to get traded, but have they potentially lessened the return by including him in this trade as opposed to dealing him separately.
That's a possibility. The way Rizzo described it today in a 20-minute press conference he had with reporters there was that the trade was for Soto initially. They wanted Susanna, whose name I'll actually butcher as well because I was looking for a pronunciation key on all these guys today just in case. But Rizzo basically described it as it was a bell for Susanna at the end there. And that's the one guy they're really excited about, apparently, according to what Rizzo had to say. So I knew Bell was getting traded. We'll get into this, I'm sure. I thought there were going to be a lot more people traded if they're going all in on the sell-off. You include Soto, you get an extra young prospect thrown in there, a kid with a really projectable arm, number one ranked pitcher on the 2020 international signing class according to the Nationals press release today. Throwing them in there, you get another prospect that you wanted, major league talent, you got some minor league guys that are on their way up. It fits with where the Nationals are right now.
I found it interesting. I'm sure we weren't the only ones just kind of waiting for more news to break for more trades, and they just kind of nothing happened. We'll probably come on to that in a bit and what they should have done, but obviously the trade came on the heels of Soto turning down a mammoth 15-year, $440 million offer contract extension offer from the Nationals. Obviously, the Nationals believed that indicated that they weren't going to be able to sign him long-term before reaching free agency. What did you make of that contract offer? Do you think they should have gone higher? Not necessarily handing a blank check over to Boris, that's probably one of the most dangerous things you could ever do. But do you think that offer was fair, or do you think they should have gone higher before potentially pulling the trigger on this deal?
As much as they're going to deny it, I can't see the ownership position trying to sell the team right now not playing a big factor in this. From what Soto said on his side, he wanted to know who was going to be owning the team, wanted to know that they were committed to winning if he was going to commit that long term. From the national side, I'm sure there's got to be something going on there with the fact that, you know, you're trying to sell the team. What does a new owner want to work out a deal with Soto? Does he want to have a stock farm system from a trade with Soto? So I have to imagine that played a role in it. But Rizzo and David Martinez both said today that the relationship with Soto was fine, but it didn't play out well there. And you saw Soto, who doesn't have a whole lot to say most of the time, explaining to reporters that he was kind of hurt by the details leaking out. When he turns down that sort of deal, him and Boris are clearly stuck on the AAV. What was it, the 20th highest AAV in the majors right now? If he took that deal, they don't think that's where he should be. When you compare it to the other players, which what Rizzo said, Mike Trout's AAV, Bryce Harper, it did, you know, I think it was higher than those guys. I don't think you're getting the Max Scherzer 40-something million a year. Rizzo said he would give him a three-year deal like Scherzer got, which is a funny joke in all of this, but it did really seem to me like the relationship kind of deteriorated to the point where it forced them to make a decision at this point and forced them to make this trade.
Yeah, I think my comparison all along was kind of the Mike Trout deal. And I do follow along with the Nationals' logic that the Scherzer deal, I don't know if it's necessarily irrelevant, but it shouldn't be kind of a yardstick for the whole thing where his AAV is somewhere way north of $40 million a year. But that is for a three-year deal. You see some of these guys getting inflated one-year deals. You probably saw it with Nelson Cruz for the Nationals this year, where if you're paying short-term, then you can bump that AAV up. And it also played out in the Bryce Harper negotiations, where I think the Giants and Dodgers were coming in at shorter deals, obviously less total value but much higher AAV. If I remember right, the Dodgers was something like 4 years for $40 million for Harper, along those lines. So if Boris and Soto wanted the long-term deal, then I think they were never going to reach Max Scherzer's AAV. But when you look at, say, Mike Trout, who got 12 years just over $35 million AAV, I think that's more in line with what the Nationals were kind of going or going to end up towards potentially. So something along the lines of maybe, I don't know, 13 years, $500 million, and then you're sitting right around Mike Trout's AAV. So I think it was perfectly reasonable for Soto and Boris to turn down that 15-year, $440 million. It was perfectly reasonable because of the annual average value, perfectly reasonable because of ownership. He doesn't want to lock himself into a 15-year deal, and then you get one of these terrible owners who's just trying to use the major league team as a cash cow, I suppose.
And you're stuck there for 15 years with someone you might not get along with. When,
yeah, exactly.
Not much it was about the San Diego ownership, but we'll see if they end up trading too.
What I'm going to do now, we're going to go through each of the players, have a little bit of a look in detail. Obviously, it looked like they were going to get Eric Hosmer for a little bit. That didn't end up working out. He vetoed his part of the trade to the Nationals, and I don't think anyone can blame him rather than just kind of sitting with the Nationals, losing 100 games a year. So he ended up going off to the Boston Red Sox, and in his place, I kind of feel sorry for Luke Voit a bit, who looked like he was going to be with the Padres going to the postseason. season probably, and now he's just kind of thrown into this deal. There wasn't any other adjustments for Luke Voit. They just swapped out Eric Hosmer and put Luke Voit in. He's under team control through the 2024 season, so it probably wouldn't surprise me if the Nationals brought him on and are probably going to trade him again in the near future.
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise either, and I'd also like to see the text chain between Voit and Hosmer if they're friendly out there, because he probably didn't appreciate Hosmer blocking that trade, and then Voit gets thrown in there. Rizzo described him as just a veteran who can help be a mentor on a young team, big back and play first base, which they need now that you lost Josh Bell. I'm not sure Joey Meneses is the answer over there, though he did get his first MLB home run tonight, but I think that's a definite hole on this roster once you get rid of Bell. I was thinking all year, if he got injured, what they were going to do over there, if it's Michael Franco moving over, or if they're going to bring Meneses up. I can't pronounce his name either, but yeah, it makes sense to add this guy. You get a veteran presence there. Nelson Cruz is apparently still on the team, which I'm sure we'll get to. I'm shocked. I figured he could have gotten something for him. I thought that was kind of the whole point of signing him, but maybe there just wasn't the interest there, the way he's hitting and people watching his bats this year. So, Voit, throw in. If you get all the prospects you want, you get a major league bat thrown in there for a couple of years. They want him. Nothing too exciting there, but some pop in the lineup, I guess.
I don't think there's a downside to getting him. He's not blocking anyone. The Nationals are pretty bereft of first basemen in their farm system. You have Riley Adams, who's trying to play first base at AAA. We'll see how that goes. And the next one is Brandon Bossier. Like, he's not blocking anyone. Maybe he can hit a little bit. Maybe they get a prospect for him in the offseason or next deadline if he's hitting well enough. Like, I don't think there's a downside to it, but obviously he's not the headliner. The headliner, or multiple headliners, I suppose. So you get CJ Abrams, a shortstop, former number 6 overall pick, former number 9 overall prospect, according to Baseball America. He whizzed through the minor leagues, perhaps too quickly, because he made his major league debut and has had an underwhelming 605 OPS in 46 games this year. He's hitting a lot better at AAA, where he'll start with the Nationals. They optioned him down there earlier today. He's a bit of a speed demon with excellent bat-to-ball skills, and the power is developing a little bit. He's probably a better version of Luis Garcia, and hopefully one who can actually stick at shortstop, because I think we've seen, even though the Nationals have played Luis Garcia at shortstop this year, he doesn't look like he's going to be there in the big leagues permanently. So do you think CJ Abrams is the shortstop of the future, and what do you see with him moving forwards?
I asked Davey Martinez this spring. He gave like a scathing review of Luis Garcia's defensive skills towards the end of last season. But when they said that, I was kind of like, Davey, can you square these two things? And he gave the explanation. It made sense why they wanted to put him over there and see what he can do. I liked him much better at second base. I'd swing him back over there immediately when you're ready to bring Abrams up. I'm not going to pretend I know a lot about these Padres prospects. I started looking into them in depth as soon as they were one of the 4 teams that was left there. So I'm aware of Abrams and Gore. The other, I know the names, basically. I'm not going to pretend I know more about them than I do. The Nationals have had luck picking shortstops out of San Diego's system before. Obviously, Trey Turner was another trade they made. If their scouts like him as much as they like Turner, and you get Abrams here, you got a nice duo up the middle with him and Garcia. There's good and bad with Garcia. The bat, obviously, is a plus. If he's at a less demanding defensive position at second, I think it's going to work out better. And the two of them up the middle, I like where the Nationals are going with that. You believe that middle of the field defense with those two, Robles up the middle, Kyber behind the plate, you got the makings of a core of a roster there.
I definitely think he's the long-term shortstop, and like I said, I think Luis Garcia is destined for second base. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to move him to shortstop this season, I don't think. I think it would have been better just to play him at second base, because I don't think there was any scenario where he was going to end up at shortstop long-term. I think they were just making room for Cesar Hernandez, who they probably should have traded. Didn't do that either. The next prospect that we'll look at, Mackenzie Gore, former number 3 overall pick, former number 6 overall prospect, according to Baseball America. And this season, he actually started really well. He had a 1.5 ERA in his first 9 appearances, but then had a 11.05 ERA in his last 7 appearances before he was put on the injured list with elbow soreness, which the Nationals believe is minor. Obviously, Mike Rizzo loves his pitching prospects. What do you think he thinks of Mackenzie Gore?
I think they think it's a, maybe not this season, but a major league ready arm. Clearly need help, but you have him, Cade Cavalli, and Josiah Gray at the top of your rotation. They're onto something there, counting on 3 guys to pan out in the majors, but it's a nice add. The elbow injury concerns me, obviously. The Nationals said they checked out all the MRIs. Rizzo said the doctors gave him enough to make the deal. The two top major league ready prospects in the Padres organization. They have. I don't think we'll see Gore this year or Abrams at that point, but those are two of the headliners and the major league ready talent the Nationals wanted in this deal. I like what it portends for the Nationals rotation. If these guys are healthy and performing at the top, you got a nice top three right there. I don't know what, if anything, we're ever going to get out of Strasburg, but he comes back in any sort of form close to what he was in the past. And you got four starters there, so I can see where they're building. I can see what they're doing. He's obviously well regarded all around the league, so I like those two at the top of it. I don't know as much about the two prospects below them, but a lot of talent in this trade, and it was enough for the Nationals to be convinced not only trade Soto, but throw Bell in there.
Yeah, I think Gore's definitely got front end of the rotation potential, and we saw that before the elbow injury started nagging him, and it's entirely possible that those first nine appearances are more akin to what we're going to see long term, and perhaps he was dealing with that elbow soreness through those last few appearances where he was struggling a little bit. The other prospects, Robert Hassel III, current 25 overall prospect in Baseball America and former number 8 overall pick. He's more of a hit over power player in high A, 846 OPS, but could grow into more power. He was drafted as a high schooler. Initially had concerns as to whether he would stick in center field, but the defense is improving massively. And the other outfielder they got is James Wood, perhaps the most intriguing player in the deal. A second round pick with first round talent that the Padres signed for way over slot value out of IMG Academy, a former teammate of Elijah Green down there. Much like Elijah Green, he had strikeout concerns coming out of IMG, but those fears seem to have been quelled so far in professional baseball. And another potential five tool corner outfielder. He's, again, like Elijah Green, very big for playing center field. So if he keeps improving, he could end up being the best player in the deal. So the Nationals have been adding a lot of outfielders lately, which is kind of interesting.
A lot of big outfielders. Maybe they knew they weren't going to keep Soto in the long term. You had a 20-year-old guy, Rizzo, called Hassel, a five tool talent. He's 20 years old. Robles doesn't have to worry yet, but they got potential future everyday outfielders here in the trade that are young, huge, 6'6", 6'7". It's just, along with Elijah Green, as you mentioned there, they got some really powerful-looking young kids here who are going to grow. Elijah Green, I remember on the night of the draft looking at his father. I think he's like, Elijah is like 6'4", 220 now. His father in his playing days in the NFL was 6'5", 280, something like that. So you imagine there's going to be a little bit of growth there. They added a lot of power back in the outfield to their system here. And two more today, something the Nationals definitely needed, I think, in the system. And, to get these two guys, add them to the list, and, they're immediately top 10 prospects in the National system, if not, higher than top 5. So I don't know much about them. I'm not, like I said, but all the scouting reports I've read are positive about what they bring, and the Nationals are clearly excited about the additions.
And the top overall pick next year might be Dylan Cruz in the MLB draft, so they could get a fourth outfielder and start to revolutionize the shift when they ban it. But the farm system has raised itself significantly. I think Fangraphs put it at number 8 overall, which maybe that's a stain on the Nationals that they trade arguably the best hitter in the game and one of the best of the generation, and they only get their farm system up to 8. Do you think they had to do this? And is this trade kind of covering up some of the deficiencies in their player development over the last few years? Obviously, they had to trade some of these guys away to keep competing for the decade long, but at the same time, should it really have had that much of an effect on the farm system?
It clearly does have an effect. The drafting before this, the fact that these guys are all going to slot in the top 10 does say something about the effectiveness of the draft in the last couple of years. They do have a lot of young prospects. Rizzo and Davey this week, seemingly on message, have been talking about all the prospects at the low A, the high A-ball affiliates. There's a lot of talent pulled together down there. Jeremy De La Rosa, another outfield prospect. They're stockpiling this kind of talent.
And yeah, there's Christian Vaquero in the Dominican Summer League, but I think it's too far to project how far away he is. The final prospect in the deal, Harlan Susana, a bit more of a wild card, lighting up the Arizona Complex League, has a fastball that lives in the high 90s, touches well over 100 regularly. He's probably the toughest to project because he's so far away, and obviously the tools are pretty loud, but when you come to, say, Hassel and Wood, who have started well, they're not, say, striking out a ton. It does look like they're going to project pretty well, but Susana, it does feel like it's just a bit more of a wild card, and if the Nationals get anything out of him, great. Maybe even, worst case scenario, he ends up as a reliever who throws 105 but maybe doesn't know where it's going. Those guys get roles in the bullpen.
6'6", 235 at 18. That's just ridiculous at this point. Rizzo described him as the youngest and least known member of the group, but possibly the highest upside of the pieces they got today. They said he was really coveted and they really wanted four that we've discussed previously. 18 years old, 6'6", as I mentioned. Rizzo's report here, good, clean delivery, throws the ball hard. He's 98. We saw him twice in the last 2 weeks. He's up good field for a changeup at 18. Another high-end pitching prospect added to the mix here with the Nationals. And the focus Rizzo put on him and when he broke down all the prospects, I thought was interesting. This is some guy a guy they're clearly excited about, and one of those guys I'm sure their scouts loved, and adding him in the mix here essentially for Bell gives the Nationals that wild card that you mentioned there, but a potential really impressive arm here.
Yeah, I wonder how much homework the Nationals had already done on these. I know some of these guys probably weren't in the system when the Max Scherzer trade was rumored to be happening last year, but they've probably done their homework even in a short period of time. So it does sound like Rizzo and the rest of the front office are excited. But now, moving on from the Juan Soto trade, like I said, we were expecting the Nationals to make other moves. They had Nelson Cruz. Even if he's not been performing up to standard this season, you would have thought someone might take a punt on his veteran presence. Steve Cishek has actually been serviceable in the bullpen at this time of year. You can never get enough bullpen help. And even some of the guys that maybe they could have just taken a punt on, like Cesar Hernandez, for instance. And then some of the other controllable guys, such as Kyle Finnegan was rumored, Carl Edwards Jr., maybe even Yadiel Hernandez. How surprised were you that they didn't do anything after the Juan Soto trade?
Air trade, Yadiel Hernandez. I'm looking forward to watching a lot of Yadiel Hernandez down the stretch here now that they didn't trade him, but that's the only one of the players you mentioned that I wanted to see on this team if they were going full in on the breakup sell-off here. Nelson Cruz, I guess he's going to be a great mentor down the stretch. Just have to imagine nobody but bid on him or offered anything substantial to make the Nationals do it, but you look at Finnegan, 30 years old, a reliever who didn't make the majors until the Nationals signed him away from Oakland. Carl Edwards Jr. is having a good season. Another 30-year-old, Cishek, 36, I think. I'd have to look it up, but I just, when you're doing a sell-off like you did last year, I just expected all these guys on one-year deals to go for anything. You just take flyers around the league, try to find prospects your scouts like, you know, reward them all for finding people you like out there and get these guys off of the roster. But I'm wondering if it's a question of the Nationals just not thinking they have the arms to fill the roster if they dealt these guys. Cesar Hernandez, Alcides Escobar as well. I don't think you're going to get anything. The middle infielders I'm talking about, I don't think you're going to get much of anything. Cruz, you figured you could have gotten something from a contending team that wants a bat. Finnegan and Edwards, you hope you could have gotten something for them too, but holding onto them just, it perplexes me at this point. I'm just assuming, though Rizzo didn't say much about this angle because he spoke today 2 hours before the deadline ended and had to get out of there quickly, but I just imagine there was no one offering anything of value for these guys or else they would have dealt them.
Yeah, and last season they pretty much sold everything that had an expiring contract. They even managed to pull off Houdiniak to get rid of John Lester for Lane Thomas for a warm body, even at that. So, yeah, it was a surprise, and like you say, perhaps it was just a lack of interest, particularly in someone like Cesar Hernandez, who has been probably one of the most disappointing players on the team, who hasn't provided anything. You thought he was either going to sell out for power like he did before, or kind of go back towards the on-base threat that he was, and he just ended up doing neither, not really getting on base, hit no home runs this season. But if it's the case of not having enough interest, do you think that's a bit of an indictment on the front office for what they did this offseason, where they didn't take enough of these punts, I don't think?
You can't blame it all on the front office. The performance of the players, I think, is the biggest role here. The fact that there wasn't interest, seemingly, or not enough interest to warrant trading them. Watching the Mets broadcast the last couple of days, they've been on and on about Nelson Cruz clearly losing a little speed there. Maybe other scouts around the league saw the same, didn't want to take a risk on him and pay whatever he's left of the Nationals. I think $15 million they signed him for this year, but I just expected all those guys to be off the roster, honestly. And I'm starting to think, one, there was no interest. Two, the Nationals didn't know if they could build at-bats and innings if they got rid of all those guys.
Yeah, I think it's still a bit disappointing. I even said it at the time in the offseason where it felt like they should have kind of leaned into getting more and more one-year deals. Some of them aren't going to pan out. That's just the nature of the game. So they get some of these guys. Cesar Hernandez does what he does this year. You kind of manage. But to only trade away one guy, Eray Adrianza, for a low-end prospect from the Braves, that's why I feel like they should have taken more punts and hoped that a couple of them worked out, that they could have easily flipped and actually had some more appealing options, particularly in the bullpen. We've seen some of the guys go today who have a little bit of control, like Kyle Finnegan and Carl Edwards Jr., who have actually netted notable prospects, not top 100 guys, but guys towards the top of teams' lists. So that's why it was a little bit disappointing. And like I said, I think it stems back to what they did in the offseason, where they probably should have taken some more of these one-year guys. And now we have to watch the corpse of Nelson Cruz and Cesar Hernandez play the season out, I suppose.
And for a team that's prided itself on their ability to scout and scavenge around the league and find these guys that are under maybe, they just have shown an ability to identify some of these guys and kind of find the diamond in the rough, especially relief arms. So the fact that they wouldn't take flyers and just, you know, throw these guys out there and get those kind of arms back and hope some of them turn into something. I just fully expected that today. It's kind of surprising that they didn't end up doing it.
Now we're at that point where the Nationals are where they are, and perhaps they can learn some lessons in the offseason coming up. I've always said it's something that teams who are out of it should be doing more to spend. All you're losing is money by taking a chance on these guys. You're not locking yourself into multi-year deals. Technically, there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal, even if they just play out the season and that happens. And yeah, it's a far cry from 2019, where the Nationals seem to dumpster dive and always strike gold for some reason. And just to round it off, we will wrap up Tuesday night's game against the Mets. It was Corey Abbott against Jacob deGrom, and obviously the Nationals managed to win. There were some pretty cool moments. I thought Luis Garcia's game was particularly interesting, hitting the home run, making a big difference. I think he got the go-ahead RBI to make it 1-0. We've talked about him a lot. Does he kind of become the face of the rebuild at the Major League level at this point?
Right. There was a lot of joking going around where it was Juan Soto's team once everybody traded now, and now who wants this team? So I guess Luis Garcia reluctantly inherits that mantle, but Garcia, Robles, if he can turn into something, we've seen him continue to struggle this year. I like the young core that they have, the guys that are kind of hanging around here. I don't know what Thomas be in the end, but I guess if you're building around people, that Kyber, Garcia, they're the two that are up there now that are part of the core of the future, everyday player-wise. Robles, we'll see what he can do, if he can turn himself back into one of those things. Everyone likes to note that he was a higher-ranked prospect than Soto for a time before they both came up. So I haven't given up on Robles yet, even though he continues to frustrate me, and I'm sure Davey Martinez too. But they have three young players there that I think are, you know, for now, going to be the face of the Nationals on an everyday basis, because, you know, pitchers in 5 days, those are the three that we're going to see out there.
That's the state of it at this point, especially with the prospects they've acquired. I think Abrams needs more time in the minors before he comes up and starts to become a face of it. Like I said, Mackenzie Gore injured. We may see Kay Cavalli in a few weeks. I'd be surprised if he doesn't come up and make a few appearances before the end of the season, as long as he keeps performing in AAA. It's going to be a pretty bleak watch for the Nationals for the rest of the season, but someone has to do it.
I was thinking about the next 50 games. One of the highlights was watching Juan Soto on a daily basis. That's not the main reason, people, obviously, but he was something for the fans to latch on to. He was essentially the face of the franchise before today, and he was one of the, you know, reasons to tune in every day on a daily basis. Now, are people going to tune in for Garcia, Kyber Reed behind the plate, and Victor Robles, Josiah Gray starts? Got to give the fans a reason to come to the park. I don't know what the Nationals are going to sell going forward. Unlike with Ruiz and Gray last year, where you had two guys up and you made a trade that sent away someone like Scherzer and Turner, but at least you had those two guys up. Like you just said, I don't think Abrams could use some seasoning. It seems every scouting report I read talks about how he looked overmatched against Major League pitching so far. I don't think you're going to see two guys up right away that kind of show this is why we did it like we had last year.
And I think the rest of the season is going to be tough to watch, but yeah, that's the nature of the beast.
Yadiel Hernandez marks like myself around the world are going to be very excited.
But Yadiel Hernandez and Joey Meneses.
There we go. Put them on the poster. You got to take those big Soto signs down around the park.
That's all we had. Thanks for joining me, Patrick. And hopefully it's not too depressing the rest of the season, but we'll see.
Good to actually talk to you. I think it's been 3 years working at Federal Baseball, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks to Patrick for joining me late on Tuesday night after the Nationals' win over the Mets and a pretty hectic trade deadline. If you follow me and my work, you no doubt know the legend of Patrick Reddington and the machine-like work he has put into Federal Baseball over the years. As we mentioned towards the end, it was particularly disappointing that the Nationals weren't able to trade the likes of Steve Cishek, Nelson Cruz, and Cesar Hernandez for prospects, especially when they were signed in free agency specifically to be traded. Obviously, they depreciated their own value with their performances this season, but you have to think there was at least some team who would have traded a low-level lottery ticket ticket or a player on the outside looking in of a 40-man roster crunch, just as the Nationals did last season when they got Lane Thomas in return for John Lester. It's something of an indictment on the front office that they either only signed players who flamed out this season and maybe should have looked elsewhere or signed more veterans to one-year deals in the hope that some of them would have been able to make themselves appealing trade targets, or that the front office was so consumed with a one-sided deal that they simply ran out of time before the deadline passed to work on other trades. The only group who know that answer, though, are the Nationals' front office. Well, that's all we have for this episode. Moving forward, we should be on a more regular schedule releasing episodes. We're going to be releasing them every Monday now that the trade deadline is quieting down, and just to get into a rhythm for the rest of the season. We'll see you next time.